Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, November 2nd, 2013. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and I'm glad to have here with me in the studio, Anton. We call him Tony Chaikin. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you, Marcia.
And you will know him, many of you, or meet him for the first time, as he is the historian, the history desk of Executive Intelligence Review of EIR Online. And we have Tony with us for the full hour because our topic today is John F. Kennedy versus the Empire. Now, I appreciate that all of you do appreciate why this we'd be doing it now. This is the month in which 50 years ago President Kennedy was assassinated. John F. Kennedy versus the Empire is the title of a piece Tony wrote. It's in our EIR in September. Look for EIR online in September. And he wrote about powerful figure in history of President Kennedy, including many aspects of them that some with general, even appreciative knowledge may not know, pulling together his role internationally, as well as aspects of the key work he did here in the United States. And I'll just say, by way of introduction, and welcome to Tony, remind everyone, Tony's been collaborating also with Michael Kirsch of the science team. We call it the basement team sometimes, the R&D outfit of the LaRouchePack.com. That is Michael Kirsch. And the two of them, most recently, you can look on LaRouchePack.com for a video that Michael's interviewing Tony, but they're discussing President Kennedy. And you can find other material there, as well as past material in EIR online. But I want to say a few things and then have Tony open things up for us in our full discussion. But by way of updates, let me just tell people, Tony and I will be discussing more the level of degradation we're now at in our nation and internationally, where we have the threat of all-out thermonuclear obliterating war due to the decline in our nation economically, politically, culturally, especially since this marker moment of the assassination of President Kennedy. We're also seeing a killer policy that's in the name of health care that's proceeding under the Obama administration, which again is just the opposite of the directionality at the time of President Kennedy and led by President Kennedy, where we were building up the science, the facilities, and the commitment and compassion to care for people, to care for life. Now, even if I know the fact of the farce that you can't get health care on these exchanges, you can't sign up for a policy because the exchanges are crashed half the time, is in the headlines. But even if everyone on Monday had a plastic card in their pocket that entitled them to health care, where would you get it? The Obama administration is cutting programs at hospitals, cutting hospitals themselves, driving out physicians. We are in an emergency situation, and the problem is lawmakers on Capitol Hill and some around the country, not all on Capitol Hill, but the public is complicit in letting this continue, letting this kind of danger, letting this process that threatens our lives, our nation, and in fact threatens civilization. So let me counterpose to that today, however, out in California, in Pasadena, there is the opposite, the hope for mankind, a gathering of people who are committed that we can get out of this situation. It's focused on development in the greater Pacific that includes, if you want to get geographical, from our Mississippi westward, we won't leave out us people east of the Mississippi either in this, but includes the whole Pacific Rim nations, China, all the way to India, Eurasia, Southeast Asia, Oceania. There's a conference, I think it's held by the Schiller Institute, and there are messages and by videotape and in person from Beijing, from Russia, from India, and from here in the United States, from South America. So I want everyone to watch for that on LaRouchePub.com, and also you'll see notices. As soon as that's reported, I'm sure the LaRouche Political Action Committee will have reports of that in the next 48 hours. Helga Zepp LaRouche is addressing this conference. Mr. LaRouche himself, too, I think will do so. They're doing it by video. So this is a counterpole to what I began by discussing, the assassination of Kennedy, the decline of our nation to the point of all-out danger. And I hope it raises for everyone that we're in a battle. And you know what side we better be on, the side of humanity, as exemplified by this conference I just mentioned. And I just want to point that up by saying our immediate task here in the United States is to get out a functionary, a kind of flunky, Barack Obama, who's occupying the White House, who's acting on behalf of what Tony will describe more, the empire, the kind of Wall Street City of London financial axis. And so really there are multiple grounds for formulating counts of impeachment whose proceedings should be brought against him. It can be everything from the nature of this Accountable Care Act, Obamacare, whose intent and now record is killing people. It could be the conducting and fomenting and making wars without any of the constitutional requirement of taking it before Congress, as you saw in Libya and in Syria, and many other points. So it's really us versus Wall Street, and we have specific tasks to strike the killer blow against Wall Street by forcing a reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Act from 1933, which was in for over 60 years, and by launching the kinds of credits and jobs, that is to say, betterment, development, deliberate development policies. That's the nature of our country. That's our mission. Now, I want to just point out I hope we all feel this. It's somewhere or other, although it may be submerged in the American people, that we can respond to this with the right leadership and the right call to action. And it was especially vivid on Tuesday this week. It may be Tuesday or Wednesday, I forget exactly, when there was a demonstration against the Obama administration out near Capitol Hill, and there were a few thousand people from the coal mining regions of the Appalachians. That's Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, Southern Virginia, Western Pennsylvania, and there were signs all over the place. Go online or go on LaRouche Pack if you want to see them, and they said, "Save America, impeach Obama." And the senator from West Virginia who addressed it, Senator Manchin from the coal state, said, "Well, I look out and see all these signs, and I'll tell you, I'm sure the White House sees them. I think they're making counter signs. It says, 'Save Obama, impeach coal.'" So this is on the lips of people. Now, we have to get it into action that the solution here is impeach Obama, get this Glass-Steagall Act, and otherwise it's going to be mass genocide, either quick in the way of war or killing people in the process of removing health care or removing being able to eat. Yesterday, the big cuts in the food stamp, it's called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, kicked in. And we have 48 million Americans, a large part of them children, who are so poor they're dependent. They qualify to depend on domestic food relief, and there's a big cut in the funding for that. So we're not here to catalog all of these instances. Anyone listening will know. But I want to point out to people, there's a statement that you can circulate on this sign, put in your papers, beat on your congressman's head, that was put out by LaRouche Political Action Committee leaders on Halloween, October 31st, this week. And you can go and find it. It's called Glass-Steagall or Mass Genocide. And it summarizes what I just said about the war threat, the Hitler-style health care, and what is in store unless we, in fact, it ends. Without Glass-Steagall, we are facing mass kill. Now, one concept, and then we'll go to Tony. The opposite of this, I mean, is not merely beating it back a bit, as has been done over centuries, I guess you could say, with other manifestations of the kind of I called it the City of London Wall Street. That's just a financial network, but the kind of oligarchical, imperial, we're us and you are you and you're going to die outlook. The opposite of this isn't just beating it back somewhat, but going for all out for renewing science, for going after especially the betterment of the economy through higher levels, advanced levels of organization, especially energy from nuclear power, where we left off decades ago. This points the way to a glorious future. You wouldn't just start to have a commitment to care for everyone. You'd have vast more means with nuclear medicine as a general given. Who know, in research, isotopic kind of analysis, which hasn't been going on any scale. So it's really this kind of future orientation we're talking about that should guide what we're doing right now. And with that, Tony, why don't you start out, because I just asserted that President Kennedy was a singular figure in history with a particular impact, but he's also in a continuity with those kind of people and their outlook who founded our nation to begin with, and you might want to address that larger perspective.
Yeah, John Kennedy fought for America, and he fought for mankind. And he was assassinated 50 years ago this month. His assassins, Wall Street and London, need to be taken down. And we can crush them with Glass-Steagall and a program to sweep ahead with the measures that you're describing. Why don't you know about what Kennedy stood for? Well, it's not permitted to think in those terms. The thinking of the country was changed by the people who took over the finances and the direction of the country, by his assassins. His assassins control the way you think. That's the problem. Now, historically, when we've wanted to make a change in the popular mind, the way to success at making that kind of cultural change is to get people employed in making progress, employed in great projects, employed in advanced industries, exciting advances for mankind, but they have to be employed. It's a kind of a paradox. How do you get the public mind changed? Well, Verdi had that problem, you know, and he wanted to have people think about what in our culture, what in people's memories might stir them to do the great things that were necessary for the salvation of the country. Today, we can look back on this anniversary, take advantage of this to look back at John Kennedy and have in our minds this precious idea of who we were under the proper leadership that we demanded, that we were entitled to, and to have that be a contributor to a kind of momentum, a kind of motion that people have to see in order to get really into a fight. So use this for that purpose. Now, what's the mission of America that John Kennedy fought for? And the mission, and what was he oriented to for fight for mankind? Think about why people came to America in large numbers in the past, and why they still come to America, even though America, like from Mexico or Central America, even though America that they are going to isn't any good right now. It's a mess. It's a disaster. They want a better life. and they want to be able to make a contribution. They want to be free of what? Of a whole system that was in Europe, and that's in Central America now, of the rule by a few that makes the common man live a life of dirt. It's not, they didn't come here to have elections. The idea is that you want a society that is led for the purpose of uplifting the bottom of society and benefiting everybody. There's also a common interest of rich and poor in the United States. Never existed before. That doesn't exist now in the United States as a strategy. That was Kennedy's strategy. But the idea that the government and the nation exist to reverse the Dark Ages and to inspire mankind to bring up peasants into citizens and citizens into skilled workers and scientific thinkers, including farmers and other people, that's a mission that is quickly translatable to the whole world. And that was his outlook for everybody. And it's obviously what put him into a conflict, a fear for his life by his friends and everybody else, that was constantly occupied his presidency. There was an assassination attempt before he came into office in December of 1960. We have to look back at this American idea that was famous already in the person of Benjamin Franklin in Europe, when they knew Franklin, when he was in Europe, in England and elsewhere, spreading this idea in the colonial times of what we're doing in America and what we intend to do against this horrible system, not only system of class rule and banker rule and looting by the East India Company, but the effects of that, such as religious wars in Europe. That's the same system. It's a system of war. And an empire always involves war. So Kennedy's purpose was to end that system and go back to the purposes of the American Revolution and the nationalists who came before him. And he was in tune with and working directly with the nationalists who came up in the post-World War II generation and were putting on the table for America and the world, we intend to have nations that are as powerful as America and to really follow in the footsteps of America to do it. And that was their concept. That was a concept in Indonesia. That was a concept in Ghana and in the Congo and in Egypt and other countries. And Kennedy was their partner, and the British Empire and their partners in Wall Street said, this danger is going to destroy us, destroy the power of this financier imperialism. The combination of the rising expectations to have a high living standard and have powerful nations, well armed with modern science, and with those expectations and the new American president coming elected in 1960, who is famous in the Third World and throughout Europe for being in favor of the anti-imperial revolution of the Third World. If you put those together, you see the rage and fear by the empire.
Yeah, maybe you want to, I know we can go to different parts of the world, but maybe before that, summarize a bit. He traveled, you brought out certain speeches he gave in different places. This is prior to him, his campaign for presidency and so forth, expressing his intention and concern and scope for the rest of the world.
All right, as a young congressman, elected in 1946, right after the war, mm-hmm. he dedicated himself to solving this problem of the USA betraying Franklin Roosevelt's passion for improvement and his commitment to the end of the empires, his commitment to build up living standards, that was betrayed by Truman and Churchill. Truman obeying the Wall Street-Churchill axis. And then the Dulles brothers also in the Eisenhower years, despite Eisenhower's best intentions. Kennedy came up in 1946 as a maverick Democrat. And in Congress, he was concerned about this foreign policy, as it's called, problem. But he's looking to restore FDR, as he understood him then. And then as he goes through Congress in the House and then the Senate, he builds up his own concept of what he will do when he's running the show. And in 1956, he was a candidate for vice president. He already had his eyes on the White House. So back in 1951, when he's looking to get into the Senate, he's still a congressman, he traveled to Europe, met with Eisenhower, to the Middle East, and to Southeast Asia and other parts of Asia, India, with his brother Bobby, who is the only member of his family who's close to him in age, except his older brother who died in the war. And they looked into this problem of imperialism and what it meant to the world that the United States had abandoned its place in the world as the major power for progress of the world. We just gave that up. He said, this is outrageous. This is not the era of Disraeli and Palmerston, he reported back to the American people. Now there's a revolution going on, and the people, the Arabs, the people in Iran, the people in Vietnam, they want modern times. The problem of the Arabs is poverty. What are we going to respond? Why is America on the side of the British and French empires? That's wrong. It's delivering the world to the communists, and the communists are wrong historically. That's no solution. American ideals being abandoned, the world's got no hope. So he was a maverick from the start, and contrary to being ruined because he differed with the party line, he was the one who survived and prevailed in the 1950s to take the Democratic nomination, and the other Democrats were discredited. They went nowhere. So that should be a lesson for us, because when he was the most successful president we've had, along with two or three others in our history.
And also, you remind me of the, and then echelons, whatever they were, Republicans included, of people who were still studying engineering, working in factory floors, otherwise aspiring to build something in Alaska, you know, were mobilized by the expressions or this movement, and could be, and he was organizing them. They were being organized. They were ready to build, to go, to design, to implement.
Yes, and the public in the United States, you must admit that in those days, in the 50s, we still had the technological expertise from earlier days, and we're going to have to go some to restore that now. But we do have still the capability that we gained after Lincoln to transform the world in a hurry. We have electricity. We have now nuclear power. We have all these things. We have the capability to do space travel. So,
by the way, we have genetic modification. This may alienate some people. As long as you don't have Monsanto, Wall Street, the City of London, and everything else, you can develop all kinds of productivity, high yields and everything.
Yeah.
People just are being forced into confusion against technology. You know, that flight, if you go fast forward, you get into the the empire's deployment of green insanity and everything
else. That's what I want to address now. So,
go ahead.
So you see this mostly in Africa. Let's look at Africa became his passion because that was where there was such a dramatic revolutionary movement. Was it a communist movement? No, nowhere. It was nationalist. It was neutralist. And I think you could say the two centers are North Africa with the Arabs and Black Africa with Ghana, the leadership from Kwame Nkrumah, who overthrew the British in what was earlier called the Gold Coast, and the Congo, led by Nkrumah's protege, Patrice Lumumba. So Kennedy made an alliance, a personal friendship, with Kwame Nkrumah, who had been in America for 10 years. He was half American by this time. Typical maverick who would criticize America just like any good American should. But the idea, the American idea of progress was burning in his mind. He learned this in the FDR years. He loved the Tennessee Valley Authority. So Nkrumah, back in Ghana, makes a friendship with Kennedy. He's the first head of state to visit the Kennedy White House, March of 61. And Kennedy pledges that the United States will arrange the financing for the great project to electrify West Africa that Nkrumah is working on, to build a dam on the Volta River called the Akasambo Dam. Similar ideas for all of Europe, for all of Africa. He missed out on being able to finance the dam on the Nile, which Nasser built, because John Foster Dulles screwed up our backing for that, which Eisenhower had earlier pledged. He made an alliance. Kennedy made a friendship with Nasser as well. So this dam went ahead despite the constant attacks by the Wall Street London alliance, and that included the murder assassination bureau that was set up by MI6, led in the Congo by Daphne Park, the MI6 station chief there, who recently said that she, or recently was quoted in England saying that she organized the assassination of Lumumba, in 3 days before Kennedy became president of the United States, they had assassination attempts constantly against Nkrumah. This assassination bureau, jointly run by the Dulles group in the CIA, and then the group that was still there or associated with intelligence after Kennedy got rid of those people in the top leadership of the CIA. So these people were not the U.S. When you say the CIA, that's not the U.S., especially when the president of the United States is fighting them. And they're trying to undermine him. They give him the Bay of Pigs. They extort that from him. They murder his the man that he's in favor of in the Congo. They make a pact with the anti-Arab fanatics in North Africa, in Algeria, which Kennedy is allied with. And he made his famous speech for independence of Algeria in 1957. So he's known for this policy. Now he's our elected president. And when the elected president is murdered by a gang of assassins who are murdering people all over the world, and it's foreign oriented, it's run by British and British policy, and then they change the policy away from what our elected president was trying to do, what do you call that? That is a coup d'etat. Don't talk about just a murder and an assassination. It's the overthrow of our government, of our constitutional government, which has not been repaired. That's the issue that we're dealing with here. So what did the British intent. Let's look at that just now in terms of, and you can see this most clearly in Africa. In 1959, there was a report issued here in the United States by the Draper Commission, the Draper Committee that was set up under Eisenhower, that said the U.S. government should fund birth control and population reduction in the third world. And Kennedy responded to this by saying, the United States doesn't promote birth control in the U.S. or Western Europe. If we are going to advise black and brown and yellow people that they should cut their population when it's not growing any faster than ours is, people will draw the obvious conclusions. And the problem is the management of resources. The resources are capable of growing much faster than the food supply. But it's who owns the resources? What's it about? Who's managing Africa? It's colonial. Aldous Huxley and his brother Julian Huxley from England were both in America at that time, and they commented that we have to get rid of nationalism. We have to cut the population of the world. We have to get America off of manufacturing and into services. And we need a new religion which abandons the concepts central to America from the past, like the myth, Julian Huxley said, the myth of equality. During Kennedy's presidency, these guys and their friends in England participated in a British state operation run by the government of the United Kingdom. Not the regime, but the state, the state apparatus, headed by the king, the queen and prince, called the World Wildlife Fund. That was set up under Kennedy's presidency and against Kennedy.
Yeah, 1961.
And it was
adjacent in its, I visited there, its office was next door in the same hallway of the Conservation Foundation, founded in the 40s.
Fairfield Osborne's Conservation Foundation, which eventually merged with them.
Yeah, there
you
go.
That's why it's next door.
The continuity, yeah, go ahead.
So what they said was that there's a rising tide of favoring industrial progress, and that's the problem. And this will sweep us away. The rising tide of population growth, industrial and urban, quote, development, unquote. This is a quote from Huxley. Prince Philip came here in 62, and he said that industrial progress is tyranny, and people are subject to this tyranny. So they're getting up a whole murder apparatus and a murder sentiment against Kennedy's objectives. So what was the result? The dam was built in Ghana, but after Kennedy faced down the British in the Congo, the British tried to remember that the Congo was originally Belgian, but it was always really the British. Even Belgium itself is really a joint. It's a British operation. It's the Venetian element in Britain that set up that whole business as Belgium as a separate country, and the imperium in Africa was always British oriented. In the Belgian Congo, the British really were the most important owners of the minerals, and they tried to break up the Congo as a nation after it got nominal independence and separate Katanga province into something controlled by them. They ran mercenaries into there to destroy the country. Kennedy armed the United Nations and directed with Utant, Secretary General, the UN forces to quickly sweep the British-run insurrection out of the Congo restore peace to the Congo and national sovereignty. The opposite of what we do now, where we follow the British and destroy countries and use so-called international things to destroy country after country and break up their sovereignty. When Kennedy died, that point of view was swept aside. You had this guy Mobutu as the dictator of the Congo. And people say, oh, it's the bad dictators who caused the problems. That's such horseshit. It's such an evil stupidity for people to keep saying that. Mobutu, recall, was a member of a little club set up by Prince Philip and his partner, Prince Bernard, called the 1001, a Nature Trust, or we call it the 1001 Club. And he was constantly, as he was the dictator of that country, which he renamed Zaire for a time, Congo, he was constantly congratulated by the British and by Prince Philip and by the World Wildlife Fund for ruling that country for the benefit of the imperialists who were still in control of Africa after nominal independence of its countries, looting all the minerals, looting everything, and making sure that there was no drive for industrialization anywhere. Year after year, under Mobutu, the average income of people in Congo went down, an average of more than 2% per year, for years, decades. What did they need? Well, they needed what Kennedy believed in and what he did. That dam in Ghana is visible from space. It's the largest artificial lake in the world. And the idea that Nkrumah had was to industrialize Africa as a whole and to work with people like Nasser and Nehru and others to industrialize the world. That's an American perspective.
Yeah, I think you had Detroit Edison, a man named Walker Sisler, who was a collaborator of Enrico Fermi after the war, had a tabletop demonstration, a replica of a nuclear power plant, and was taking it to Egypt and taking it to Iran during this period, which overlaps in from the 50s to the early 60s. And, of course, it was thwarted.
Yeah. So,
well, you may want to continue that. That is stark. And in elsewhere in Southeast Asia, for example, because the whole what happened in Vietnam is the same. The Vietnam War, the same results prevailed of thwarting Kennedy in this nature of the United States.
Exactly. Before we get to Vietnam, let me put something that happened in a sense before that, because the big dramatic stuff occurred in 63 with Kennedy, and then he was killed. In 62, remember, he had this crisis referred to as the Steel Crisis.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it was a showdown with Wall Street. People think of it as a showdown with the steel companies, which misses the point terribly. It's crucial to make this distinction. Without this, you miss everything about what was going on. Was Kennedy pro-business? Yes. Was he pro-labor? Yes. How could you be pro both of them? Well, he's in favor of legitimate industry. That isn't Goldman Sachs. That isn't J.P. Morgan. Let's look at J.P. Morgan at the time. They set up a corporation called the United States Steel around the beginning of the 20th century. They set it up by taking over existing steel mills, which they had not built and never, J.P. Morgan never invested in any new enterprise. A startling idea, if you think about it. That's the spirit of Wall Street.
Well, it's the Mellon family's from a lot of the Pittsburgh steel mills they got, and they made their money by clipping mortgage foreclosure coupons.
Yes, that's exactly right. They steal, and they impose hardships, whereas the idea from Lincoln on of the steel industry was we're going to provide the kind of new jobs by improving technology that will give people a good living and will make profits that are plowed into the development of the country. So under Kennedy as president, we had the highest increase rate of wages and profits at the same time. Kennedy put in the investment tax credit to give a tax break to those who invested their profits in building up the industry and new
physical
means,
demonstrable
that's right,
and infrastructure improvements and so forth,
and the research and development that would that would go into it. And the owners of the dominant steel companies opposed that. Think of that. They did not want to have the tax breaks that would make them profits in the steel industry, because they did not want profits in the steel industry. They didn't want any actual profits at all. They wanted monetary profits, not the increase in wealth in the nation. And so they were part of this British crowd. And the you know, you go back to that photograph of J.P. Morgan Jr. sitting with King George the VI in 1939, where and they're hashing over this problem: how can we keep supporting Hitler without the interference of Franklin Roosevelt? So this is, his sovereign is the King of England, and that's the way Morgan thinks to this present day, that they're part of this empire, and they wanted to change the United States, as they eventually did, to a post-industrial ruin. So Kennedy had a plan and worked this out with labor and industry, that they would not get price increases for the steel companies, and the steel workers union wouldn't demand a wage increase. They'd just get increased benefits for the time being.
And production and could be seen to be increased.
That's mean, right.
They, so for they the, foresaw
so that we would not
production.
Have inflation.
Yes, that's
and
it.
And the dollar would be strong. It would be strong because we're building up the real wealth of the country, not because of you know, some gimmicks. And the so when the when and there was an a general agreement for that, the workers signed the pact, foregoing a wage increase, and immediately, the chairman of U.S. Steel, Roger Blau, who was subservient to the Morgan Bank interests in New York and London, because they control the board of directors. Ever since the, you know, for a century, and so he came to the White House and delivered a fait accompli to the president, a press release that already went out saying we're raising our prices, ha ha. And Kennedy went to war with them. It took 72 hours for him to win. He had a press conference that people, I invite people to look. It's a 2-minute video that you can easily see on the internet, on the YouTube. It's beautiful to see the American president with this controlled fury saying, I asked people what they could do for our country, and we have their answer. You know, this irresponsible, unpatriotic gang. And he sicked the Justice Department on them, run by his brother. He took away defense contracts. And the real blow was that there were three steel companies that did not raise their prices. And the most important one, politically really, was Kaiser Steel, run by Edgar Kaiser, the son of Henry J. Kaiser. Edgar Kaiser at that time was Kennedy's man in Africa. He was the supervisor, this real superintendent, of the project to build the dam in Ghana, the Akasambo Dam. And his name is prominent on a plaque set up by Nkrumah to honor America. There's another plaque honoring Kennedy.
That exemplifies it. By the way, I was a teenager in Pittsburgh at the time. People ran out in the streets with excitement. Everybody was running around saying, "Do you know what Kennedy told Roger Blau to go to hell?" And people were thousands of
people.
So
you were alert at that time, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Us old timers can
say
those things,
I hate to tell you, I was
right?
19 or so. It wasn't hard.
So this is the spirit of a legitimate American industry, an interest, an industrial interest that the president was marshaling, was mobilizing, along with mobilizing labor, like these guys in West Virginia that you described. And that's what he appealed to get elected, and that's what he was appealing to all over the world, that spirit. That's what he thought we should have been doing all along. You would never have had the Cold War. You would never have had any of this disaster. Is that because communism was not a problem? Yeah, it was a problem. Would we say today that crazed fundamentalism of Muslims or anyone else is not a problem? No, it is a problem. But the answer to that is to look at how it came to be such a problem because of this imperial monetary system and the objectives of people running the world who hate America. And I'm not talking about Muslims, I'm talking about the Queen of England and this system of our opponents in the world who are the assassins of Kennedy. So now
we have time is whizzing by, but we have 10, 12 minutes here, and you may want to say something about how the Vietnam War ensued because of this same dynamic here, where you have those of the empire deliberately trying to not only destroy people in Southeast Asia, but destroy the United States.
Right. Kennedy was a real student of this history, a passionate student of this. And he was there in Indochina. He went there during the French War, met with the French leadership, and he understood what had happened, that the Vietnamese tried to align themselves with America's promises under Franklin Roosevelt. And after Roosevelt was dead, the U.S. government told them to go to hell. They had issued a Declaration of Independence right at the end of the war, World War II, and it was modeled by Ho Chi Minh on the American Declaration of Independence, almost word for word. And he made an appeal to Harry Truman to set up in Vietnam the kind of protectorate that we had done in the Philippines and guide them to independence. And we spat on them and said, no, you have to be taken over by the French. De Gaulle, later on, counseled Kennedy about, because De Gaulle himself had been pro-French Empire earlier, and Kennedy's own intervention against the Algerian War of the French helped to turn De Gaulle. So De Gaulle then was counseling Kennedy in a good way on Vietnam. But he himself, Kennedy, had been there. He understood this. So what was happening in 1963? There was a good article, an interesting article today, believe it or not, in the Washington Post, by a guy named Thomas Bass, who's a professor at SUNY Albany. And it's about General Giap, G-I-A-P, who died recently at the age of 102. He was the leader of the Vietnamese in the French War, and then began and stayed on as the leader later. But as this author points out, was not in total in control of the policy, the military policy, in 63. And later he was at, there in 1963. There seems to have been a response to Kennedy in North Vietnam. What was going on is that the president of South Vietnam, Diem, who was backed by Kennedy, was making peace overtures, feelers, to North Vietnam. And he was determined that there should not be a war in Vietnam like the French had. Diem was determined on that, even though he's a fierce anti-communist. So according to this author, General Giap and Ho Chi Minh both opposed a Communist Party resolution that was passed in 1963 that was in favor of making war on America. And and both of them were put out of the top power for a time in North Vietnam, according to this author. And this makes total sense to me. And the question is, what really was going on there? And we have to. I'm going to do some real digging on this. But what you have to understand is Kennedy's point of view. That's the crucial thing. You know, you can investigate all the politics you want about what's going on internally in Syria or Iran and look back and forth of the leaders of Iran today. The real issue is America's leadership. Why aren't we friends with those countries? You know, just before Kennedy was murdered, he financed a nuclear reactor for Vietnam. It was put there. And then it was not used, obviously, because a war raged after Kennedy was murdered. So what happened is Diem, the guy doing the peace feelers to North Vietnam, was assassinated. Kennedy's policy was betrayed by his own guy in the State Department named Averell Harriman, a real skunk that I've written about, and part of this Bush. You know, he's the partner of the Bush family. He's close to Churchill. This is the Churchill crowd. And they assassinated the president of Vietnam, and a few days later, this international gang of assassins run by the British and Wall Street murdered John Kennedy. And after that, there was a disastrous war that resulted in chaos and the dislocation and disruption, genocide in Cambodia, all kinds of horrible consequences, not all of them directly run by the British or this Wall Street crowd, but they're the ones controlling the fact that the United States is withdrawing from and opposing the very things that would prevent these catastrophes, which is building up civilization. Stability comes from civilization, comes from progress, not from defending the money interests of some stupid speculators, as we do today. The consequences of the present policy cannot be really understood by people unless they have a concept of what Kennedy was trying to do. In 1963, there was a World Food Congress meeting in Washington. Kennedy addressed them, and he said, "We have to banish hunger from the world, outlaw hunger from the world, by cooperation between the great countries on science and by developing the underdeveloped countries." The New York Times responded to Kennedy's speech to the World Food Congress with an editorial called The Specter of Malthus, where they said Malthus was right, the food supply can never live up to the increase in population. We must cut the population. And that's the problem. Today, people generally... here's the heart of the problem as I see it. People today, because of the changes imposed on our country, including this stupid anti-war movement that came in after Kennedy, where they made the mistake. Why they failed is because they didn't go on the same principles as Kennedy had to build up industry and science in the third world. They were opposed to that.
No, their slogan was out now, and do not allow any discussion of anything about development.
Yeah.
Forget it.
And there, it's part of the growth of the environmentalist movement. But the problem is that today, people do not agree with Kennedy and Roosevelt and are the American mission of uplifting the population with the power of man over nature. They would agree with the New York Times and the British monarchy that there's too many people, that resources are fixed, that you can't solve these problems with technology and with work and with invention. However, at the same time, they revere the memory of John Kennedy and Lincoln. And this is universal because a majority of Republicans as well as Democrats think in tremendous admiring terms of John Kennedy. So that if they are presented with the real Kennedy and with Kennedy's policies like Glass-Steagall, like controlling Wall Street and breaking their back.
Increasing physical production.
And increasing physical production. Given that picture and given that as a possibility, people are overwhelmingly for it, without any doubt. It's just like, you know, if you put on a competent classical music concert in a high school, you know, from the outside, the parents and the community love it. And before that, they were all, you know, just dissolute people who followed whatever was the current insanity. So that is our problem. That's our paradox, that we as a nation have a mission. We have that mission. That is the United States. The Declaration of Independence was not a mistake. And Kennedy's inaugural address discussed his proposal to uplift the people in the huts and the jungles and the other places where they are backward and they want to have progress. And we pledge our efforts to help them, to help themselves do that. And to the Russians, we want to negotiate our way out of this standoff with the Russians. That's his inaugural address. He lived up to that in the space program, and people are not generally aware of this today, that he changed the objective of the space program, which had always been in his mind to do, but he was only able to do it after the Cuban Missile Crisis and really get away with it. And that was, he said, we are not now thinking that we will go to the moon ourselves. We are going to go to the moon with the Russians. We're going to land first on the moon as a joint landing of American and Soviet scientists and astronauts. And that was what he was working on when he was murdered. The second to the last national security memorandum, I think it's called number 271, it's easily available online, it issued November 12th, 1963, was to James Webb, ahead of the NASA, from Kennedy, saying, you have to personally keep control, close control, of our relations and our contacts with the Soviet Academy of Sciences, which is our main channel to the Russian leadership. Sane people involved in the channel, very important, and sober people. Anti-Newtonian scientists on both sides. Hugh Dryden and Sidyov on the Russian side. And because there are people in our government, he said, who do not want this to happen, and I don't want them interfering with this. This is our policy. The policy of the United States of America was to have this greatest in history joint project between the United States and Russia, and that was murdered along with John Kennedy. So right now we have to resume that. The Russians dumped communism. What more do you want? Do you want them to kill themselves in addition to that? Do you want America to kill itself too? Kennedy thought otherwise. And in that last year, Kennedy himself, in addressing the National Academy of Sciences, said Malthus was wrong. That the by our actions, we're going to prove him wrong. By mobilizing man's capability of producing enough food to feed everybody.
Well, I think that I'm afraid we have to stop, and it certainly put everything in perspective. I thank you, Tony Chaikin, very much for this remembrance of Kennedy in the greatest, most universal sense. And I remind everyone, including that last in Tony's article in September in EIR Online, that there are quotes from this National Academy of Sciences, I realize. And without more particulars are available in an October 18 issue of EIR Online from your colleague Michael Kirsch, who focused a lot on what Kennedy was doing in the United States, how many nuclear power plants, how much in the way of desalination, the application of R&D. So thank you again, Tony. And are your books still in print? Mention this for me.
Yeah, The Treason in America is available on Kindle. I think it's $9 through Amazon. And the Bush book, George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography, we have it here. And it's available through EIR, and you can get it.
Right. And so with that, I want to thank everyone. It's November 2nd, 2013. And thanks, Tony Chaikin. This is Marcia Mary Baker. We're signing off today. Thank you. ¶¶